Hi, I'm WMNF General Manager Rick Fernandez, and I want to extend a special welcome to all our new listeners. As you will discover, there is something for everyone here at WMNF, where we dive into everything from Nina Simone to the Ramones, bluegrass to bossa nova, blues to news, and the list goes on. Our programmers are passionate curators providing you hours of music and news. We hope you find a home here at WMNF, where there will always be a place for you in our community radio family. Stay safe and be well, and thank you for listening.
The governing body of WMNF, the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation, is seeking applications for the board of directors. Candidates may be from the community at large or currently volunteering for WMNF. You may find the application in the About section on our website, wmnf.org, or call 813-238-8001 and ask to be emailed an application. The deadline to apply is Friday, September 25th at 5 p.m.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, 9 a.m. weekday mornings right here at 88.5 FM. You'll hear the same fearless investigative reporting on topics too hot for the mainstream media. Tune in to Democracy Now! 9 a.m. weekdays right after the morning show. That's right here on WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Clearwater, Winter Haven, and Venice.
We're back here on the Sunday Forum on WMNF 88.5 Tampa. It is now 7 minutes, 7 minutes after 11 a.m. here this Sunday morning. This is Walter L. Smith II, the voice of the Tampa Bay area, along with the members of the 4th Estate crew. Alvaro, we have Ashley Green on the line. Ashley,
yes,
how
wonderful.
You doing this morning?
Oh, you know, it's beautiful Sunday morning for the most part.
Yes, yes.
You know, cannot complain. Happy to be here with you.
Absolutely. So let's go back to what you were saying, Ashley, because I don't want people to miss it. So we were talking about all these things that we're seeing from government on every level with regard to demonstration and the bad policies, the one-sided accusations of terrorism. I mean, not even terrorism, because we aren't terrorists. They're the terrorists. These people that they've overlooked since the beginning of the Trump administration. God dog it. I owe $10, don't I? I said it. I actually said it.
Oh, yeah.
I've not said it the entire... How many years?
For years. I don't know. Like 5 years.
For five years.
So it should be $10 for each year.
It should be. I'm sorry, man.
$50. Hey, not bad. Have a good party.
I didn't do that to
you. That's all right. It's all right. Hey, but listen... You know what? Proud to pay it.
Speak his name. He's not Voldemort.
Okay. No, he's worse than Voldemort. He's the one who remains nameless on this show. We have an ongoing thing, policy here on this show that we don't say the name. But it's all good. Listen, you know, when he got into office, the very first thing that should have been a red flag to anybody was the fact that the white nationalist groups were no longer on the top of the list of people, of groups that were to be watched by a federal government. That's a problem.
Yeah.
That should have been a red flag to everybody.
You know, but the red flags were always there. And... to be clear, I want to be immeasurably clear that Donald Trump is a symptom of a rot that has existed at the core of our democracy, maybe even since its inception. But he is not somehow some special, you know, actor. He is a puppet. He is somebody who is easy to maneuver. But people have been trying to figure out how to worm their way back into the federal government since they, by and large, have moved to the fringes of major policy in the wake of the 60s and the 70s. So these people, like, Stephen Miller, you know, they've been biding their time. The banners of the world have been biding their time. And for a lot of folks, I think people just thought that, the president's ineptitude and his inability to really think critically, his inability to pursue long-term goals for just outright short-sightedness mm-hmm. was going to stop him from being able to figure out the different levers of, you know, the federal administration. But he was surrounded by people who had been working to get there for a long time. And I think the real, you know, fear that I have around the second term, and let's be clear, these white nationalists aren't going back underground. This is something that they have been plotting for. This is what Dylann Roof shot up a church in Charleston for. Right. This is a targeted, multi-decade-long campaign to get us to this inflection point. But I think what really, you know, concerns me about the potential of a second term, and while I've had to, you know, suck it up and say, go ahead, vote for Biden, like, I don't want to say that. Like, it's gross. I don't want to say that. But it has to be done because they have figured out how to use these levers for outright terrorism against their opposition.
Right.
And they're going to. It's not hyperbole. It's not, you know, a maybe we'll do this kind of thing. They are doing these kinds of things right now. We are equipped to fight liberalism. We've been fighting liberalism for many a decade. But I don't think people understand how grave the threat to fascism is to us unless you are from outside of the U.S. And so all of my friends, all of my comrades internationally, you know, have been sharing, oh, these are things that have happened in my country, and this is how I knew when the state was about to become ultra-violent. And, like, one by one, the things would happen. The thing that happened in Portland with the, you know, unidentified state police was something they had been warning us about for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, I'm not trying to ring an alarm. I don't think an alarm needs to be rang. I just think we're in the moment. And we have to be very clear about what are our options here that minimize the threat of fascism. I'm trying to get my people to freedom. And I believe that my communities are capable of existing with real justice in my lifetime, not in my children's lifetime, not in their children's lifetime. But when we have people like Jane Castor and Brian Dugan, who literally waited months after seeing drivers try and threaten to kill protesters with their cars to make a statement, and then all of a sudden there was a public recording that came out of a woman threatening it. Like, we were warning against this for months. People have been hit by cars, and those people have been arrested, not the driver. And so at every level, we have to be concerned about leaders who fail to be moral and ethical when given the opportunity. We have to take that as a very clear sign about where they're going to align. Mm-hmm. When somebody like Bill Barr puts out an arrest order for a nonviolent Black Lives Matter protester, but allows white reactionaries to not just threaten, but actually run people over and drive home.
Right.
That's the thing that we have to be prepared for, or else we're just not reading the writing on the wall. And I refuse to be in a situation where we're not being realistic about the threats that we're facing.
And not just drive through the crowds, but hell, run through the crowds with AR-15s and shoot people.
Yeah.
And then run for cover behind the police line. What?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I was in Newport Richie a few weeks ago where we were protesting, and there were Proud Boys out there. One was flashing a gun, threatening race war. And the police just stood by. And later on, the Proud Boys went and prayed with them.
Wow. Wow.
Like, that happened in front of our eyes.
Wow.
Yeah. But often we see these groups as separate and on their own, and very often they're not. Very often they are the civilian component of the repressive apparatus. You know?
Right.
And it may be a little bit more difficult to see in this country because of the power of the media. It is a lot easier to see in our countries. I'm Colombian, and you can see that. You can see and in Colombia, it's Proud Boys times 1,000. You know, times 1,000 that go into the countryside and they just kidnap people, but actually kill them.
Yeah.
And women, children, community leaders. You know, so And they're tied to the government. They're tied to the government. They're tied to the police forces. They're tied to the armed forces.
Right. That's crazy. Now let's take this call and then we're going to shift gears because we got to talk about this issue of environmental impacts, Ashley. And this is perfect because you deal with the issue of climate change, but this is a bit different. Let's go ahead and take this call right here from Karen of Dunedin. Karen. Good morning, Karen. How are you? Welcome to the Sunday Forum.
Hey, it's my first time calling you guys.
All right.
Nice to hear you.
Glad to have you here.
I think you need to sound the alarm. I don't think you should apologize. It needs to be sounded loud and clear. And I totally agree. Trump is the systemic problem. I remember back sometime in the 50s or 60s, the Ku Klux Klan said, you know what, we need to kind of go undercover and just infiltrate the police force, the government, and I think that's what they've done. I really do. And I am a white female, but I would be scared to be an African American in the United States of America right now. And my heart breaks for you that you have to live like this.
But you know, Karen, let me just say this. Don't, you know, we can appreciate the sentiment, but let me just say this. Don't let your heart break for us. Don't let your heart break for us. Come on out and put your heart into it. You know, put your heart into it.
I'm sure she is.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure. But, you know, and that's a message I would say to people, white people of the same sentiment. You know, put your heart into it. Put everything you can into this because it's what happens to us. You know, this
will
happen
to
for
you.
Generations. Right. And it will happen to you at some point. Our problem, what faces us now, I always say it. Our problem will, at some point, become your problem.
That's right.
And therefore, our problem is your problem.
I grew up segregated as a child in New Jersey. I mean, I'm old. So, I mean, I went to my elementary school was all white until sixth grade, and then we had a mixed race boy. And luckily, my family was not racist. My mother did not raised me that way, but I, and understandably so, when I got to middle school, they were angry at white children because of the racial disparities they had to live through. And I understand it. And absolutely. it was hard as a child, you know, because I'm like, why don't they like me, you know? But I understood it.
Right, absolutely.
Well, it's clear. I just want to make this one caveat of, I'm not apologizing for ringing the alarm. From my perspective, an alarm is something that warns you when a threat is oncoming. And what I'm saying is the threat is not oncoming. The threat is here.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the moment where people always talk about, what would I do, you know, if I lived under slavery? Or what would I do if I lived during the civil rights movement? I'm like, you're living in those moments. Right now, they're not hypothetical. They're not, you know, oncoming threats. We're here, and how we respond, what these next 6 months look like in our republic, will define the next decade of our lives. If we do not respond in the strongest of terms to reject fascism, if we do not respond in the strongest of terms to try and overcome climate catastrophe, if we do not get at the rot that inequality because of race, because of class, because of gender creates in people's daily lives, we will not exist in a republic. And hey, some people want that. There are nihilists and cynics across the country who think we just need to have another civil war and duke it out. But for myself, I know that my people will be the first people to die. I know my people will be the last people to see freedom. It's just the arc of our country, decade and decade, century and century. And I don't feel like we should have to put that kind of blood on the line again. We need to respond in uncertain terms right now. It's already no uncertain terms right now to stop this encroaching fascist threat. Because right now, it is Trump over country every day of the week. Every day of the week. These people are living in an alternate reality in which they have been taught that we are a threat to their very way of life, even though it's them who have been killing us for decades and centuries on this land.
It's right. But we can't ignore it. We can't pretend like it's something on, you know, the distant future. It's here. And we have to stand up and say, as people, not as Americans, not as men, not as women, not as black people, as white people, I mean, as a species, as a human race, that we reject this kind of violence, that we reject this kind of threat to our ability to survive as a species over the next decade.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree with every word you just said. Thank you guys for what you do, and I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Absolutely. Please share this. You can check us out on our Facebook page. Share and like it with your friends and have them do a watch party. This is important information, okay, what we're about to talk about today. So thank you very much, Karen.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your ideas.
Take care. So this is WMNF 88.5 Tampa. Sarasota, St. Petersburg. This is the Sunday Forum with your host, Walter L. Smith II. The phone number here is 813-239-9663. Call in. We want to hear from you. It is 22 after the hour of 11 o'clock. You know, Ashley, you and I have known each other for a long time. And, you know, as I sit here, I look at all the things that I'm having to deal with environmental, because I deal a lot with environmental issues. Environmental racism and environmental impacts on the black community is a really big issue that's near and dear to my heart. And when we talk about the issue of climate change, that is one aspect of a series of other issues that are impacting our communities. And I look here in Tampa at Progress Village and the impacts that it has had to endure with the flooding it took, and it's taken with just light rains for 60 years. The county, Hillsborough County, has done nothing to resolve this issue down there in Progress Village. For a shorter period of time, it has had to endure dust from gypsum stacks from local mining operations. And is facing, looking down the barrel of a shotgun, when we look at the fact that if, in fact, there is a Cat 5 hurricane that were to come through here, which we have dodged a bullet several times, if it was to hit our shores now, you would have flooding of epic proportions, people trying to wade through waters that would be basically a chemical soup of heavy metals, radiation levels of very unusual proportions that people would have to be exposed to. That's not okay. And these people are exposed to it now through the gypsum stacks and things, because the byproduct of gypsum, one of the things that happens is you have radon that's created. You have these people who are having to every day wipe this dust off of their porches and cars and stuff like that and inhale this stuff. Yet they were given $20,000. $20,000 as annually, as an annual bit of money that's given to them for what they're having to endure.
Yeah.
As a community. Yeah. I'm sorry, Alvaro just asked the question whether it was community or as individuals, as a community that were given this $20,000, right? Like, that's gonna resolve
that's
anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You go to Uniontown, okay, in Alabama, where you look at the type of environmental racism that takes place there, and it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. These things are killing people, killing black people at epic proportions. They're placed on lands that we were placed on lands generations ago. We're having to stay on these lands quite often, and they've never been mitigated. I talk quite often about the stuff that goes on in East Tampa that most black people aren't even aware of. aren't even aware of what's going on. I venture to say that there are a lot of black people that have no, that most black people outside of Progress Village really have no idea about what I just mentioned just now. It's sad that we've got to be on the front lines of these of these issues. Like I was saying earlier, we got to look, we got to be on different fronts and fight these battles and respect each other's ability to fight these battles. But we got to get into them. If we don't fight them, if we don't get into the battles, then we're lost. I mean, South Carolina. I just share this, and I want to get your perspective of this, and Ashley, you know, in South Carolina, Westinghouse deals in electricity, electrical energy, right? Producing electricity by means of nuclear energy. And in the southeast side of South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, is a black community that this is set near, set next to. And I'm sitting here, I got a phone call the other day about this issue. Wow. And now they're looking to extend their lease. Looking to extend their lease. There, this is all public knowledge. They're looking to extend their lease on the land there. Now, mind you, back just last year, there was an explosion and a fire at this place. And it was of a nuclear nature. And the studies have not really been done as to what the impacts have been to the people who live in those communities. The people are looking at me, you see the frown on my face. And I'm looking at the screen now and Ashley, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, this is what we're facing.
I mean, especially indigenous people, but indigenous people and black communities across the country have been sounding this alarm for a long time. And it's disappointing because we don't get the coverage, you know, we don't get the attention in the same way as, you know, young Greta Thunberg for all her great work. I'm not out here trashing her, but we are not seen as compelling enough of a story to pay attention to. So when you talk about a place like Cancer Alley in Louisiana, mm-hmm. which has the highest rates, when you talk about the Superfund sites in Apopka and the black farm workers who worked that land for decades and, you know, have been dying in really painful ways over the last 20 years because of the chemicals, because of the runoff.
The people of South Bay.
When you talk about you know, in Childs Park, where I used to live, there's a gas plant, a gas treatment plant, you know, in the middle of a residential area. Or when the city of St. Petersburg had to figure out where to put some, you know, runoff wastewater because they shut down a facility and couldn't process after a big rain all this wastewater. Why, of all the areas, did it end up in the black community? You know, these aren't new things. These are things that we've been warning about for a long time. And it's so sad because the most detrimental impact, the most immediately felt impact of a climate catastrophe are happening in our communities or are happening in deeply impoverished white communities in the South, in Appalachia, where, you know, mountaintops have been removed to try and mine coal. And these aren't the stories that that people, you know, see as sexy enough or see as compelling enough to pay attention to. I find it, you know, really baffling and sad that it takes, you know, something like wildfires ravaging wealthy white communities for us to start to be like, oh, maybe this is a problem. This is a problem. When Mosaic, right here in my own backyard, has been causing toxicity within, you know, our aquifers now for the better part of a decade. And these are things that impact all of our lives, but because they impact black people, because they impact indigenous people, because they impact poor people, first and foremost, that's their problem. And now we're at a point of no return. I mean, we're not having a question again about how we avoid climate catastrophe. It is now how we minimize it, how we respond to it, how we work to
you know, navigate the potential loss of life that comes with it, because people have been ringing this alarm and it just didn't matter enough. And it's sad because even in our own communities, we don't have the capacity. We don't have, you know, one of, I'll be 100% honest with you, I darn near went into a depression. I almost wanted to cuss there, but I caught myself a few years ago because I realized I'm spending my life doing necessary work, fighting for justice for Black people, for workers, for young people, you know. And yet, I was really depressed when I got some of the climate science that came out in 2018 because I realized that all of my creativity, all of my imagination, all of my energy is not going into fighting the most critical problem of my lifetime. It's going to fight a problem that was supposed to be solved in my parents' lifetime.
Problem that's supposed to be solved in their parents' lifetime.
To the point that, yes, right now, Black people are struggling. Young Black people are struggling to figure out, how do we fight against a state where I don't know if I could come home because I'm driving my car, because I'm in the movie theater, or because I'm sleeping in my own bed. There's no condition in which Black people haven't been murdered by the police by living their daily lives, or that I'm fighting gentrification in my neighborhood or community, or that I'm fighting poison water in a place like Flint or in a place like New Jersey, or I'm fighting all these other things, and I don't get to spend the time focused on the fight of my lifetime in the climate crisis.
Right.
And it's sad because now even I'm at a point, and I think a lot of Black organizers are at a point where they recognize we got to walk and chew gum. We got to do it all. We don't have the luxury now of focusing on one facet of injustice in our lives. We have to prepare our communities now for dealing with floods, for dealing with droughts, for dealing with water that's been poisoned, for dealing with wildfires, for dealing with hurricanes.
Yeah,
you know,
it's incredible. Listen,
it is an impossible proposition. But what choice do we have if we want to live?
You know what, Ashley? Let me tell you something. And folks, please call it 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. We have two calls I'm going to take in just a second. You know, actually, you know, I've read and researched and watched and talked and interviewed so many people about these issues. And for me to one day get a message on my social media saying, okay, why should we? And they were not literally asking for the purpose of curiosity or asking for the purpose of actually how they could get involved. They were literally questioning. Someone Black was literally questioning why we should even be bothered with any of this stuff and questioning whether or not these things are actually happening. What proof do I have that these things are happening in our community? And I'm thinking to myself, fool, look around. Look at what's happening. I'm like, how do you not see that? You know what I'm saying? It's like, unbelievable and unconscionable that someone could even ask that kind of question.
But it's like coronavirus. It's like if you don't see it and it's not right in your face.
Right.
You know, people have a difficult time believing in coronavirus.
So I'm going to stick a I'm gonna take a respirator and shove it down my throat, a tube down my throat so I can breathe. Really? Really?
Yeah.
Like this is just not happening. Like, this is right in front of our faces. These kids are dying. Kids are dying, having strokes. They're passing out. The adults. Doesn't matter. Black, white, doesn't even matter. Just dead.
Our phones are ringing off the hook.
You know, great. Wonderful. Now, so let's do this. Folks, again, call 813-239-9663. Go directly to your questions, please. Go directly to your questions because we have a lot of calls coming in. Daryl, let's get you, Daryl.
Yeah, so these other people can talk. You just made my antennas raise up higher. What's going on in East Tampa, Jackson Heights, the Fishbowl? What's going on? That's my question. Let me get off the air.
What's happening, Daryl, is something that's happened for quite some time, which is that probably before you or I were born, there were landfills in the area, and dumping was done there. You know, without, you know, with impunity. They just did dumping. And there's no lining or anything like that. And none of this has been mitigated. Over all this time, none of this was mitigated. And they're building houses on these areas. They were building houses. And all these communities that we're looking at right now, that exist right now, are sitting on top of what was old landfills in this part of town. In West Tampa, you're talking about an area where there was a chemical plant on the corner of LaSalle and, I want to say, Rome. And guess what? The water has reached the chemicals reached the water table and has spread all over West Tampa underground. Now, this is not, I'm not making this up. This actually happened. This is actually happening. And so you know, you have businesses that in the past, the business is no longer around anymore in West Tampa, but the businesses in the past have been allowed to act and have bad business practices with, and it was okay to do. As long as they were dumping this stuff in the black community, as long as it was underground the black community, as long as it didn't affect the affluent communities, it was fine. But these people, there are people, human beings who are dying, black people dying, anybody, poor, dying as a result of these actions. They're sick as a result of these actions. And we continue to act as though on our end, even when we're told that these things are happening, quite often we're not even, don't even act on it. Nothing's done, nothing at all, or we deny not even deny, but just like ignore it. We can no longer afford to ignore this type of issue. The disasters that have hit our community have been disasters time after time after time, just constantly hit, and that's what's happening. So, you know, Ashley, please, because I'm about to have a fit over here.
I mean, you know, I don't know if I could say it any better than you. Like I was saying about the virus, it feels hard for a lot of people to recognize because they've been living their daily lives in it, and they don't have to necessarily see and reconcile until they go to the doctor or until they go to XYZ and they're sick and people can't figure out why, or the children. There are places across East Tampa and then across Tampa Bay where folks think that asthma is generational, that it's just something that happens. You know, they had it as a kid, their kids have it at XYZ. And the reality is there are toxins, there are pollutants, there are these things that are in the air because most black communities, most poor communities, this is where they're raising up the different treatment plants, this is where they're putting the landfills, this is where they're putting XYZ. And folks don't see or know about it until 20 years later where the study comes out. The government finally admits, oh, we knew it was toxic.
Right, here. Right. Unbelievable.
You knew, but
unbelievable.
And so, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating because we become complacent to it in the same way that nobody was excited about police killing people, but nobody was also surprised that police were killing people.
Absolutely
like,
not.
Been knowing that police were killing people. It was when it started being on camera.
And that it became a problem.
Running with it.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, we had a national movement around it. That didn't mean the communities had been fighting against police
violence. Like, is Mary not want to play?
Right. I'm sorry. Sister Kaylee?
Like,
yes.
Hey, how are you doing? Give me 1 second, please.
Say, I love you.
Okay, here we go. Sister Kaylee?
Thank you.
How you doing?
I want to tell the sister blessings. I've seen the blessings of our ancestors. On her shoulder and in her mind and soul. And I want to thank her for her effort. And I just want to wish her blessings. And I hope that we can support her in any way. I wish I was young. I would be out there with you. But I pray and trust, and I live it. I live the abuse right here in East Tampa, where I have to watch the people go to the bathroom on my corner, and I have to cover it up with, luckily I have a lot of trees, so I cover it up with the limbs, because the city is just a ghost entity, and we need to start holding our local officials' feet to the fire. And I just thank you, this Sister Ashley, for her labor. Blessings to the show.
Thank you very much, Sister Kelly.
You do wonderful work, Sister Kelly, for Absolutely. A long time.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay.
Entity, and we need to start.
Sorry, I think we lost it on that. Billy of Gainesville goes directly to your question. Billy, how you doing? Welcome to the Sunday Forum.
Yeah, how you doing?
All right.
I just wanted to talk about, I heard one of your speakers talk about, disparity in health care. And we need to seriously start taking a look at that. And not only take a look at that, but one of the things that, when we look at disparities in healthcare, you see that black folk lead, let's just look at the area of cancer. We lead in all expressions of, nearly in all expressions of cancers categories in this particular country. Now, it is different in other countries, but however, this particular country, we lead that area in heart disease and all sort of things. A lot of it has to do with these algorithms, in terms of getting treatment, with algorithms that are created make it tough for black folk to get treatment at earlier stages. In other words, we have to come in a lot sicker and more debilitated before we can get just treatment for our disease condition.
Right, but Billy, here's the thing. We're focused in on the issue. You're right. You're absolutely right about that. We definitely concede that point. Not concede, but we actually agree with you on that. But let me just say this. What we're focusing in on, though, is the environmental impacts that are killing the black community.
Okay, so and again, that ties into this situation here. If you have people that ignore, this process of even getting treatment is ignored, then the fact that when it comes to the environmental conditions, for example, you see in a place like Detroit where they had these chimneys, and all of a sudden these large chimneys built this trash incinerator. And all of a sudden, downriver, kids were being came in with asthma, and particularly in black communities, and they were being treated. First it wasn't alarming because no one gave a doggone about these situations,
right?
And stuff.
Right.
And eventually, and we see down in an area like Southwest Detroit where you had these large. Gasoline refineries and oil refineries coming in from the ships up the Detroit River. And again, it hadn't been spoken about in years, and yet we still had these enormous rates of cancers and childhood cancers and ulcers. And for years this went on, and then finally someone said, they seem to be some person became conscious of the fact that they seem to be treating a lot of children from this area. And then, in our case, it was being, in case of black people, it was just simply being dismissed.
Right.
And then we also, that affects our, when I was arguing with, debating your school representative named Tammy this morning, I talked about the curriculums in school. So if you're going to do something about it, it starts with having the proper physicians and healthcare team in place. But how can you have that in place when, in fact, your science programs at your elementary schools are so poor that you can't even train enough physicians and dentists and pharmacists to do anything about what's happening in? So, it's something that has to not only be pointed out, but it's something that we can act upon at the local level by demanding, as my colleague, demanding equal curriculized in all schools, not just these so-called creative magnet schools and stuff, which I call a massive failure. Because you go around the world, you see that they try to meet, leading your smaller countries, that they try to make all schools good schools. And Brother Walter, I know you into that education stuff, and I know you understand this kind of stuff. And so,
right, but Billy, we got. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, brother, but we gotta go to. We got another caller coming in. But no, good points, very good points, though. We appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, Billy. Thank you.
Good points this morning too. Good morning.
Thank you.
Good points this morning.
I heard the show. I definitely heard that.
Good morning. All right, didn't mean to frighten y'all.
No, man. It's all right.
Y'all get a little scared here when I say some things, okay?
Thank you, Billy. We appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much. All right, you bet.
All right, Howard from Georgia. Go directly to your question. Howard, welcome to the Sunday Forum.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. just thinking about you last week when I listened to the show, a gentleman called in who was saying he wasn't sure if he was even going to vote because he didn't like either candidate running for president.
Right.
Now, last time I read the Constitution, which was last week, I didn't see in there it said you have a right not to vote. You have a right to vote. Now, you can make your own choice, make your own decision, but so many people have died, been mutilated, lynched, to try to get the right to vote for everybody. The gentleman that was listening, if he's listening today, I beg him, please vote. I don't care who you vote for, but exercise your right to vote. Vote the down ballot issues. Vote for people up and down, all sides. I don't care, but please vote. And every one of your other listeners who may be thinking they don't want to vote because they don't like the candidate, that's a bad choice. It's your choice, but don't make another bad choice. The bad choice that we made 4 years ago got us where we are today. So please, please vote. And if you really want to cement my thought, I was in Montgomery this week at the National Memorial for Justice and Peace. That's one reason you should vote. Just take that into consideration. Another great show, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Howard. Appreciate it. All right. John from Winter Haven, go directly to your question. Welcome to the Sunday Forum, John.
Yes. This is my first time calling in, and
welcome.
One of the first times I've listened to the program. I'm from the Daytona Beach area, so I've been here about 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing that I want to say is this, is that I'm retired now. I've been hearing these complaints for years, since I was a teenager. I would like to say that we have to take the same approach that Mrs. Bethune, Carter G. Woodson, Elijah Muhammad, W.E.B. Du Bois, and many other leaders that we've had in our history. And that is, we have to be able to find ways, creative ways, to band together. If it's no more than 10 of us, or 20, or 50, we have to come up with an agenda. We have to face the leadership in our community. And we have to let them know what's going on in our community. If we're going to stop crime, if we're going to stop bad water conditions, bad housing conditions, bad education, then these issues have to be confronted with a plan, with an agenda. But the main thing is that we have to, as African-American people and people of color, we have to have our minds and our hearts set to do what is right. We can't get out there and protest and say we want better housing and we want clean water, and at the same time, we are playing the dozens on each other and we are preying on each other. So it's really a mental and spiritual condition that we are faced with, all of us, not just only the African-American community. The whole American society, $200 trillion in this economy, and we still have people without clean water and clean food to eat. So we really have a terrible moral and spiritual dilemma. That's all I have to say. Thank you for accepting my call.
Part of me wants to comment on that. Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I sadly do have to hop off for work. But, you know, I appreciate that caller's thoughts. for a lot of reasons, because I do think that we have to enter into a much more disciplined life if we are going to confront some of the problems that we have. But one of the things that I do think that perspective misses, and that, you know, I don't fault the older generation, but that I'm hoping to call in the older generation, is that a lot of what has to happen is people have to let go of their ego, not their pride. Our pride as a people is a part of how we have sustained ourselves through utter catastrophe and tragedy. But some people are going to have to let go of it. A lot of people are going to have to let go of their ego. Because my generation, I'll be quite frank, has done all of the things that we've been told we need to bring people together. We study policy. We have a detailed agenda. We have proposed programs. We do community service and intervention against violence from the state. I mean, there's honestly nothing that we have been told, recommended, or asked to do that we haven't done. But there's a lot of ego, and there's a lot of people who see themselves as leaders and unwilling to be followers of folks who they see as younger, or folks who they see as women, or folks who they see as queer, or X, Y, Z. We've got a lot of excuses for not coming together. And until you stop having those excuses, those reasons why you don't listen to the reasonable, then we're not going to be able to get to the vision that the caller was speaking to, because there are a group of people who are ready, willing, and building out that alternative, who are ready, willing, and fighting tooth and nail for our community. But it oftentimes feels like we're yelling into the air that the only people willing to listen are white people. And that's difficult. That's difficult because I can move a lot more. I can move a lot more with some of my white comrades than I can with people in my own community. And I've just had to get realistic. It's not because I don't speak a certain way. I'm educated. My family, you know, is educated. My mother went to Tuskegee and imparted the necessity of education on me from a very early age. Quote unquote, well spoken, even though I don't think that needs to be a criteria for leadership. And I'm involved in every aspect of my community possible. And that's still not enough a lot of times.
Right. Absolutely.
And we have to start to ask the question of why. Why is it not enough? We got enough entrepreneurs. We got enough money. We got enough plans. We got enough policies. We have enough leaders even. Why are people not willing to come together for all of that, if not for ego? And I really hope that people, when they do these kinds of reflections, be they spiritual or material, they wonder, are they willing to put our community, are they willing to put our liberation over the voice in the back of their head that says, well, why isn't that me? Well, why aren't you paying enough attention to me? Well, why aren't you focused enough on me? We're focused on all of us. And we can win if we come together. We have won before. But what are the excuses that you're making in your head for why it hasn't happened yet? They got to go.
Wow. Yeah. I like that. That is such a profound statement. What are the excuses that you have in your head? Wow, that's real. That's real. We're gonna take a break, Ashley. Folks, ladies and gentlemen, this is Ashley Green, in St. Petersburg, organizing. Oh man, we're glad to have you. Just hang tight. Hang tight with us. Oh, do you have to leave?
I gotta go to work.
Oh, you gotta go to work.
I gotta go to work.
Hey, Ashley, go to work. Go to work.
Yes.
Hey.
I don't want to have a job at the end of this.
Yeah, thank you for staying with us such a long time.
Thank you, Ashley. We appreciate you, sister.
No problem.
All right.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Peace to you. All right. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Ashley Green. We're going to take a break in just a minute. And do some housekeeping here. This is the Sunday Forum. It is 55 after the hour of 11 o'clock here on WMNF 88.5, Tampa, Sarasota, St. Petersburg. This is Walter L. Smith II, your voice of Tampa Bay area, along with the members of the 4th Estate crew. And we're very glad to bring you this edition of the Sunday Forum. We'll be right back.
The governing body of WMNF, the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation, is seeking applications for the board of directors. Candidates may be from the community at large or currently volunteering for WMNF. You may find the application in the About section on our website, wmnf.org, or call 813-238-8001 and ask to be emailed an application. The deadline to apply is Friday, September 25th at 5 p.m.
This is Joy Katzen-Guthrie, host of WMNF's The Sunday Simcha. When I moved to St. Petersburg in 1981, I fell in love with WMNF. I don't know how I would have gotten along without the morning show, the folk music of the British Isles, the live music programs, all the specialty shows, and of course the Sunday Simcha every week, in addition to the incredible lineup of news and information that WMNF offered our community. It was unlike any other station, and I fell in love with it right out of the gate. Thank you for all you do, and happy 41st birthday to WMNF.
Hi, I'm WMNF General Manager Rick Fernandez, and I want to extend a special welcome to all our new listeners. As you will discover, there is something for everyone here at WMNF, where we dive into everything from Nina Simone to the Ramones, bluegrass to bossa nova, blues to news, and the list goes on. Our programmers are passionate curators providing you hours of music and news. We hope you find a home here at WMNF, where there will always be a place for you in our community radio family. Stay safe and be well, and thank you for listening.
Want to start your Sunday afternoon with rhythm and flair? Then catch Latin Jazz and Salsa every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. DJ Speedy Gonzalez brings you the newest and classic hits of Latin Jazz and Salsa with the high energy that only he can deliver. Latin Jazz and Salsa every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on 88.5 FM WMNF, homegrown, hand-picked music and news.
Hola, this is Isha, host of Latinx, WMNF's newest program. 2 hours of Latin indie and alternative music from around the world. From indie rock, punk, hip-hop to electronic, fused folklore, we play it all. Tune in every Monday, 10 p.m. to midnight on 88.5 FM or WMNF.org. Let the rhythm get you.
I'm Dr. Bob, and I remember the 60s, sort of, sometimes, and I hope you do too. Join me for the 60s show each Saturday at noon on WMNF. You can turn it up, sing along, get up and dance, or just slump on the beanbag and let your imagination run free. The 60s show, Saturday noon to 2 p.m. here on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM, and streaming worldwide at WMNF.org.
And we are back. This is Walter L. Smith II, the host of the Sunday Forum here on WMNF 88.5, Tampa, Sarasota, St. Petersburg. Today, our guest was Ashley Green. She's one of our up-and-coming, and has been actually doing a lot of demonstration, a lot of protests out there right now, fighting for the rights of people out there who have been, in the black community, who have been beaten, who have had injustices done to them, and she continues to fight the good fight, not just for our community, but for all people. But Black Lives Matter, keep pushing. All of the organizations, keep pushing. All allies, keep pushing. Make sure that you continue to fight the good fight. Make sure that you are fighting it on all sides to protect us, to protect the community. You now, we now, our generation now are in a position that we can protect our communities, that we can defend our communities, that we can hold accountable those people who are responsible for the injustices that have taken place against us for generations. Now is the time to stop it, to stop those injustices now. This is the time. We are the people, and we are the ones to make the change now. This is WMNF 88.5, Tampa, Sarasota, St. Petersburg. This is the Sunday Forum. For 13 more or more years, we have been on the air dealing with these issues, and we're going to continue to do it. I am of the second generation of the people to take over this show, and I am very glad to have been one of the ones to do it. We miss Brother Otis Anthony. and the work that he has done. And we continue on in that same regard to do these things with you. So as always, from my voice to the radio stage, to radio waves, to the hearts and the minds of the people, I love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it here on the Sunday Forum. Peace. I'm done.